I'll introduce you.
Right.
Good morning. Take a seat, please. Our topic this morning should have been listed as, you can't talk too much about safety. Safety is a basic, you've got to know it, you've got to practice it, essential part of your business. And today we've got a dynamic trio that are going to address the topic. Chris Littlefield of Kellogg Garden Products is going to lead a panel discussion with Scott Salmon and Don Duggar. Scott Salmon from Old Castle, Don Duggar from Scott's Miracle-Gro. And they've each got a great deal of experience and some practical experience to share with you. So feel free to ask questions after. You want them after or during?
So I thought maybe between speakers.
Okay.
We could ask questions.
Good. And we're going to start with Chris Littlefield.
Morning, everybody. I'm feeling like kind of like a bad penny at this meeting. I keep showing up. I have vowed not to volunteer for anything next year, and so we're gonna all get a break. I wanted to start with disclosures and disclaimers. One of the disclosures is that as I headed for this meeting on Monday, I really felt like I didn't have sufficient content to address this group with. And so in the 11th hour, I asked Scott and Don to help with this. And that's kind of the amazing thing about this council is that, you know, on the outside, the competition is extremely fierce. And so most of us in this room are competitors in one way or another. And yet inside the room, in the council, people are aligned to make our industry better. And today, you know, we're going to talk about safety. So that's the disclosure. So I guess I really felt like I was unprepared, needed some help, and I really appreciate these two gentlemen stepping up because they add to the expertise of this thing. The disclaimer is that I'm not even close to being an expert, and so I'm not standing here trying to tell you that I'm an expert whatsoever. And at the end, I'm not going to show slides today until the end, and there'll be some of the numbers that reflect our safety progress from different angles. And you'll see from that our company has a long ways to go. So that's part of the disclaimer is, not an expert. And my only qualification to be standing here is that I'm responsible for the health and safety of a bunch of people at a number of facilities, just like you. And so I think that's where we have a very common bond. And when you see our progress so far, you'll see that we don't have a lot to brag about. I mean, there's some things that we've done well, and I think that as a company, we're still looking for some traction. So you might be sitting there wondering if you're unqualified and you're not an expert, why are you up here? And that's a great question. I volunteer, like I said earlier, but from the standpoint of we've had Don Duggar present to us a number of times, and that's like the pinnacle of safety. And maybe you can identify more with a company that's evolving and emerging and working on safety and feeling like, we're still needing a deeper understanding of what we're trying to do. And I think we'd all agree that we're lucky to be here. I don't think you have to think very far back to some incident in your life that could change the way things turned out. And even being 65 years old, wasn't that long ago that life expectancy, I would be an outlier. So there's a lot of luck in that. And some of us have worked in industries that are even more dangerous than the one that we're in today. And I mentioned luck because I think one of the goals here is to make sure that we're not depending on luck in terms of having a good safety outcome. And then the other reason I'm standing here is because I think safety is a very personal thing. You might run a region, you might be in charge of the entire United States, maybe the world operations, you might run a facility, and you might run a department, you might just be in charge of yourself. And I'd like to congratulate on having no one reporting to you. But what's more personal than your own safety? And so when someone is injured, it's very personal for them and for their family, for the people that work with them, and the people that are responsible for them. In 2011, we had a pretty quite serious incident, and we got lucky because it wasn't a fatality, but someone was injured significantly. And so, you know, there's a fair amount of soul searching and, you know, questioning what you've been done, and so we really decided that we needed to do things different. And thinking about that, I realized that our practices, the things that we did every day, were institutionalized. That is that we really weren't even aware of the practices that we had that were hazards, and that we really needed to change that. I think I think that we've got a ways to go on that, but I think it was a very important realization. We came up with five principles as we started working on how to go about safety differently. First one is safety must be a value. Safety is a moral and financial responsibility. You have to measure safety. Safety is the responsibility of the individual, and that the behavior must be monitored and observed. And in terms of value, it's one's principles and standards of behavior. What we really want to do is realizing that our culture and our habits have ingrained ways of being that were potentially hazardous. We needed to get safety inserted as a value. And so part of that list of things that you think about when you're making a decision, you want to include safety. And so in between the stimulus and the response, that reflection, we wanted to include safety. And in terms of value, it's funny because when you you have a continuum of ages and experiences of people that you work with, it's like the old timers, when you started talking to them about and insisting on being safe and having safe practices, they always say, well, we won't get as much done, right? And then I think in the long run, we all have examples of where you see that that's not true. And if it's true in the short run, then the onus on those of us that are responsible for the facilities is making sure that those situations don't exist. And one of my favorite examples of this is in our maintenance, for years we put people in those little boxes that you attach to a forklift, and so they use that to do the work in the air. And we saw that as being unsafe, that it didn't meet the standards. So we bought some man lifts, we trained people how to use the man lifts, and then lo and behold, we found out that the work platform was much better, more stable, it could get to places that they needed better, and it just took one guy. There wasn't a guy on the forklift running around, and so that was one of those types of examples. It sounds a little dramatic to say it's a moral responsibility, but when we are, if we're responsible for the facilities, and if we're responsible for the people that are in the facilities, isn't that humanity and an obligation that's on the moral side of things? And then, aren't we the keepers of the pocketbooks in the organization? And isn't there a darn significant correlation between cost and your safety record? Must be measured, and I think this is going to be an interesting part of the conversation, because you'll see that our measurements are all rearward looking, and people will start talking about a different way of looking at safety I'm hoping that we have that dialogue today. But for us, we built our program around lost time incidents. We were working to avoid those, and we were rewarding on that basis. We looked at some of the common measurements that come from your workman's comp carrier, like XBA and loss ratio, and then eventually stumbled on to the recordable incident rate. I'll show you some of those later. And then safety is the responsible of every individual is that is the fourth principle that we keep reciting. And that is, even though we said we're a brother's keeper and we're responsible for the facilities and who's in the facilities, every one of us is responsible for our individual choices. And so our choices affect us and our choices affect others. And the last one is, and this is a place where I think that we need to pay more attention, figure out how to do better, is to monitor and be engaged in the safety of those that are working at our facilities. More direct involvement, and that is you have to observe, you have to take part in, you have to be part of people's behaviors. So when we built this little program of ours, we wanted to reinforce safety as a value. We wanted to clarify the levels of responsibility and then create collaboration around removing hazards from the workplace. And in so doing, we created a reward system, which we've really depended on to be the motivator for this. Right or wrong, that's where we are in this process. People can earn days off for safety performance, and they do that on three levels. The first one is the personal level, where they can't have any infractions for safety. The second level is that their department, they have to be part of creating a quarterly workplace safety improvement. The bar is not very high for that. The idea is that they come together with an idea. We have this quarterly meeting amongst all of the departments where we meet together on the phone, and we each review the other's workplace safety improvements. So the cool thing about that is it generates conversation at the floor level, and then it generates conversation amongst the sites and the departments, and so that we can all share each other's improvements. And then the third piece of it, in order to earn a safety day off, is that you can't have a lost time incident at your site. So three levels: personal, department, and site. And that's what we've been using so far. I'll show you some numbers, and this is like full disclosure here. Let's see if I can make this go. These are classic workman's comp numbers like you would get from your carrier. I tried to make this as confusing as possible, so I used two x-axes, but we'll go slow here. On the left is X-mod, and generally that's how you're doing relative to the others in your classification, and that is the blue line. And you can see that generally over time, that has gone in the right direction downward. And you would be looking on this axis for where this line occurs, and we're just barely better than average, but we've been a lot worse than average. So I think that we've had some positive impact to what we're doing. The right-hand axis is loss ratio. It's what the comp carrier pays out or reserves for your injuries or losses, and that's a mixed bag. It's been up and down, but it's roughly the same as where we started. We've been measuring days since last time incident, and one of the reasons that I'm tickled to have Don up here is his record in terms of last time incidents. You can see that in these three facilities that I'm showing here, we have one that hasn't had a last time incident on the left, and then our two production sites have gotten as high as somewhere over 1,100 days without a lost time incident, and yet that is up and down. The right hand, or the red bar here, is where we are currently at the at all the facilities, and blue is the record for those. So some improvement there, and a long ways to go. And there's a total incident rate. You can find these statistics on the OSHA website, and it is it's essentially how many incidents you have for 100 full-time equivalent employees. And so you can see that we're all over the place on that. And the good news about this chart is that the incidents at least are minor, and yet this does not discriminate between minor or major injuries. It just is a recordable is a recordable, and here's the numbers. So that's the program that we've been working on. Again, disclosure is, I'm sure we're not there. I've been saying for too long now that I think we need to move to the next step. I'm hoping that in this, we'll have some dialogue here. We can compare what we're doing to what people that are more highly evolved are doing, and that will have some positive influence in your safety program. I'll stop here and ask if there are any questions for the three of us, and then Scott will step up. I don't like that grin on your face.
I'll be gentle, but thanks for sharing and congratulations on your attention and focus. My question pertains to perception of the individuals when you talk about no lost time per site, and maybe what the variation is of the number of processes, the types of processes, and the number of people by site. Because as we try to put a vanilla program in, the smaller facilities with 15 people or so, the larger facilities feel that's unfair if you've got 40, that there's more opportunity for a lost time, or and that they may be doing a lot more in the grinding and all the other stuff that with another facility maybe does some bagging, mixing and bagging. So how do you accommodate the differential of the complexity and potential safety hazards?
That's a great question. I mean, on the slide that I showed with the days of achieving without a lost time incident, one of those was a distribution site. No loaders, no grinders. And yet, I mean, there are forklifts and there are trucks. I mean, there are certainly hazards, plenty of hazards. But you're right, it's far less complex. And I don't have an answer for you. All I can say is that the incident rate does, though, tend to quote penalize smaller sites. But I think that I would ask either Scott or Don if they have.
I don't think it's good. It's not a good answer for that. But I mean, the reality is a safe workplace is our requirement, and you really got to analyze the activities. If you're grinding and you're processing and you're bagging and shipping in a big way, you're going to have more exposure. Just mechanically, you're going to have more exposure. But the TRIR can be unfair to the smaller plants, for sure.
And I understand the expectation across the board is just when we started introducing reward systems is where people start feeling.
Well, and I think that's a really an interesting part to talk about too. In talking to Scott yesterday, he was saying, well, OSHA's, we took our reward system out because OSHA said, we don't like that. And for obvious reasons, right? I mean, you can tend to suppress and underreport based on that. There can be a general push for that. And on the other side is, isn't safety its own reward? And so, when I think we started our program pretty generously, now we've got to figure out how to get through that. And I'm just wondering if you guys have any thoughts on the reward system, and do you have rewards and what works?
I mean, according to OSHA, you can't link a milestone or an event to a reward. So that's off the table. You can celebrate, but it can't be linked to it.
Can you speak louder?
I said, OSHA, according to OSHA, you really can't link.
There is a microphone.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
OSHA doesn't want you to tie your safety, if you want to call it performance or a milestone, to a reward, because people will underreport. You can celebrate. It doesn't mean that if you reach a one-year milestone that, you know, a few days later you just surprise your team with a thank you pizza luncheon and say thank you. That's fine. OSHA's fine with that. But if you say, hey guys, if you make it a year, we're all gonna go to the pizza joint in town, that now you've tied it to that. So you're allowed to reward, but it can't be tied specifically to that act.
Is that illegal, or is that
you're not supposed to do it?
what's that saying?
It's California, you guys wanna know where that is?
I just, Chris, it's not illegal, it's frowned upon.
So yes, sir, there you go.
Not only did I divulge internal numbers, I admitted to you I was breaking the law. So if that could just stay in the room, I'd appreciate it.
Sorry.
That's why we're here. Scott, would you stand up here, please?
All right. I'm going to take a walk. Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me okay? Good. Let me know if you can, I'll put that on, but it's kind of buzzing. So my name is Scott Salmon, I'm with Old Castle Lawn and Garden. I've been with Old Castle about 12 years, and like these gentlemen here, well, at least I will say I'm certainly not an expert, but when Chris asked me to say a few things, I thought about two things that I believe have been really important to Old Castle's journey on safety. And it is a journey, you're never there. We certainly have every year all sorts of things that happen where you look back and you go, didn't that happen 3 years ago exactly like that? And everyone's like, yep. And you'll see, even though we have what I think is a useful process to try to correct that, you'll also see that it doesn't always work. So before I get into that, I do want to say, I commend this group for showing up at 8:30 for discussion on safety, because I've been coming to these for about 12 years now. And I've been out of the bars with many of you, and the safest option for many of you would have been to stay in bed. So good on you for coming for an 8:30 safety thing. The one thing you can look at that later, that's my second part, but what I want to talk about is really, I think, the most important part. Everyone in this room, just about, you're a leader of either your company or some important function for your company, all right? It's about sort of vision, and I didn't realize this until I came to Old Castle, and we had a really energetic safety guy who I think turned our program around. When I first got into the group, I was responsible for our Florida operation, which had 5 plants. We had 35 reportable injuries out of those 5 plants the year we acquired and took over. Just to get to the end of the story, now we've had entire years where those 5 plants have 0 injuries. So, and what made that possible in my mind was a vision that zero is possible. So I know theoretically you can say it's impossible, accidents do happen. You're right, I'm not gonna take the math here mountain and try to prove you wrong. But is zero possible for an operation for a month? Yes. And so you go down that road with people mentally, if it's possible at this plant for a month, then it's possible at your plant. If it's possible for a month, than a year. So we talk about zero being possible all the time, and we expect it, and then we, like Don alluded to, we celebrate the hell out. I'm telling you, we have year-long celebrations, 500-day celebrations, 2-year, 1,000-day, etc. And we put money into it. It's like a miniature little Walmart at the plant. We're bringing food, we're cooking, we've got this huge table set of things that people want, whether it's fishing gear, cooking gear, a big screen TV, whatever, then we have a raffle. And it's technically not connected to the performance, but we have a lot of fun with it. And I tell you, that really motivates people at the plant level. They love it. And, you know, again, this is not about Old Castle performance. I think it's more about the journey. But we have about 40 plants across the country, and this has not been a particularly really good safety year for us, but 28 of them have gone over a year without a reportable. And out of the 40, 12 have gone over 5 years. So I think we've made a ton of strides when you take that starting point of 35 in 1 year, and then you take 40 plants, and we have 12 right now this year, and that, again, that's not a very good year at the moment. We're worse than last year. So I think having a vision at the very top, you and your leadership positions, if you let everyone know it's possible, and you expect it to be possible, it will start to trickle down and happen. The next thing is, they are going to happen sometimes. So when they happen, what do you do about it? And this is something that, I was in the Air Force for a while. It's something the Air Force does whenever there's an accident. They always have a lessons learned. And everyone who was a pilot at that point, or whether you're in maintenance or whatever, you are reading that lessons learned and trying to figure out what was the root cause. You know, was it something to do with the mental state of the people involved? Was it equipment? Was it a procedure? Whatever it was, you try to learn it and teach everyone else. And that's something that we've done. We do a lessons learned call. So if there is a reportable incident at a plant, and sometimes we do it for near misses, we have a call, and every leader in that chain is on that call, and it's mandatory, but it's not to rub people's nose in. In fact, we have the injured employee, if they are available, on the call. The whole idea is to learn what happened, and I usually lead off that call with saying what our three purposes are. And the first purpose is to find out, is the employee okay? Are we doing everything we can to make sure that they and their family are taken care of? That's number one. Number two is, let's make sure we identify the root cause, not what someone thought the day of. This is, we have this call out, there's been investigations, statements if necessary, trying to get too legal about it, but you're trying to find out exactly what happened. And then the third thing we're doing is figuring out to what level these lessons learned need to be disseminated to. So, it may not make sense, depending on the size of your organization, to send it to every plant, or it may make sense that you need to shut down all of your plants in the next hour because that accident was so critical or so likely to occur somewhere else, you need to take action now. And that's why we do this. So, this is an example of a PowerPoint that just is associated with these calls. And I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but we usually, if I pick one of the less gruesome ones, it's someone cut their hand. You can pop that, Chris.
As soon as I figure out how, here, I think I got it. I got it. No?
Maybe not.
There we go.
Okay.
We got
okay.
A better operator.
So we start with what happened. This is an employee who was with us for 2 months. The conditions weren't a factor. It wasn't like they were outside and it was snowing. They were in the shop. And it just talks about how they were cutting a belt, cut their hand. And what they were basically doing, if you can click the next one, please, is you can see they didn't have gloves on. So that's above where we were 10 years ago when no one probably had gloves on. But you can see those are kind of like your standard leather gloves. Are those going to really work best for that scenario? So we talked through that. The person was cutting through towards themselves, and they were using a knife that was not an Old Castle approved knife. Over the years, we've determined that there's better knives. So if you can flip to the next one. The knife on the left is the actual knife. And we take real pictures of these things. We take pictures of the injury, of the equipment, and we reenact every piece of it. The knife on the right is a retracting knife. It's a safer knife to use because if your finger slips off, the blade retracts automatically. So that was a lesson learned and over the time, and I'm going to even skip, maybe just skip to the lessons learned. You can skip one more. And so you can see there's the glove on the left. That was not very effective at stopping that blade. You can see all the blood. The knife on the glove on the right is the appropriate glove that he or she should have been wearing, all right? So then we make those available at the plant and you sell at all of your plants for your employees. So, this may be a tool that may be useful to you. If you're a smaller operation, it may not be as appropriate. Maybe you just bring people around the table and figure it out. But it absolutely helps continue to poke yourself in the eye with the exact same accidents year in and year out. So, in summary for me, I would say having that vision that zero is possible, and then when something happens, looping full circle back, because something's going to happen at some point at one of your plants, and you might as well learn as much as you can and teach everyone. So, thank you.
John. Any questions for Scott? John?
Yeah, Scott, I was just wondering, in your work with the supervision of all the safety programs and so forth, do you ever meet with the legal team representing your company, and does the legal team ever give a talk on what the legal costs and so forth that you have a bad safety record as opposed to a good safety record?
Yes, on here.
Things like that.
The question for those of you who couldn't hear was, do we ever have our legal folks or other folks talk about the cost of an accident to our team so they understand the context and the impact on the operation? And the answer is yes. Usually it's our own safety people that do that, but we used to talk about that a lot more, and we've gone away from talking about the cost as much and more just about the impact on the actual people and the operation. But it is, as was alluded to by Chris as well, it's very expensive. Whether it ends up in a legal fight or not, we all know accidents are very, very costly to the company.
No.
Okay.
Scott, when you're generating these reports, these lessons learned, do you ever find, you have like an investigative team? Because I can imagine at some point, some employees are going to stretch the truth about what actually happened. So how do you get to that truth, to where they're not afraid of losing their job, to where it can truly be a lesson learned for that individual?
That's a great question. We don't get it right all the time. We often try to, and this was done in the Air Force too, the person who has the safety incident, we try to incorporate them into the solution. So not to embarrass them, but when I was in the Air Force, if you had a ground incident and you made a mistake or in the air, you briefed your squadron on what you'd done and what you learned. And it wasn't to embarrass you, it was to make it real. Because, you know, Chris said safety's personal. This is someone who was working right beside you. You know, from a practical standpoint, the other thing we do is we get statements from multiple people. The worst type of accident is someone was in the back of the yard, no one saw anything, and then you have an injury. And it's natural because we've all probably had some folks that try to defraud you, but you have to try to, you know, trust the employees that they're telling the truth. And we don't have an investigative team per se that centrally, but each plant has someone who's responsible for safety, and that group along with, you know, others in the plant will investigate, and they do reenact it and take a lot of pictures to try to see what the employee said happened actually possible. And if not, you know, we've found all sorts of crazy things where it's almost like reenacting a crime, right? Where, well, that was impossible for that to have happened to this part of your body if what you said you did actually happened.
Do you have a dedicated safety person at each facility?
My voice is getting tired. He asked if we had a dedicated safety person at each facility. A lot of our facilities do, but a lot of them are dual-hatted in some fashion, and we allow that flexibility. When we first started, it used to be a lot of the plant managers themselves wanted to own safety, and over time, I would say the administrative challenges and the overall focus has made it to where we shifted it to other, usually a supervisory level person will do that. And in some plants that are larger, we have dedicated safety people.
So I don't know if I can articulate this, but the concern there is that do people then think that this person that is assigned to safety or has that as one of their hats is the person responsible? I mean, does that create some challenges?
It does. I think we try to have, I mean, we have safety committees at our plants, and some are effective and some aren't. And I mean, I would love to hear any input from people as to how to make the safety committees more useful. Because if you're a single point, if the plant believes that it's one person's job, you're never going to be very good at it for long. It's not sustainable.
Right.
We have that at some places, unfortunately.
Any other questions before we move on? Mr. Gardner?
Good morning. So when Chris asked me, could I speak about safety a little bit, I do love safety. So it's what I truly believe in, and I enjoy almost all of the safety. There's some difficult parts, but it's amazing the similarities that we have with these two companies. I'm not going to talk about audits. I'm not going to talk about training programs. I'm not going to talk about the things that most plants have, safety committees. I took a different path. I'm going to talk about the little things that cause accidents that you sometimes don't give it the right amount of attention. So when it comes to safety costs and culture, sometimes the little things are more important than you can even imagine. Suppose you could save 15% of your total recordables and lost times in a year in your company. Would you do it? Would you? So people don't think about slips, trips, and falls. It's like, that's no big deal. It's going to happen. There's nothing you can do about it. Well, it is a big deal, because do you know what percentage of accidents nationally are slips, trips, and falls? Well, it's more than you think. OSHA says that in general industry, 15% of all accidental deaths occur to slips, trips, and falls, second only to motor vehicles. A lot of these slips, trips, and falls that cause a death are from construction and elevated platforms. But in our company, about 15% of total incidents are slips, trips, and falls. So the majority of them are caused by obstructions on walkways, uneven floors, slippery, meaning from either oils or lubricants or ice or snow, and some are from elevated platforms. But if you prevent these accidents, they are usually pretty cheap to prevent. And you need to work with understanding, is it a walkway issue, is it a housekeeping issue, is it a design issue, or is it a maintenance issue of your facility? What's the average cost of a fall? OSHA says it's $20,000. That's in a factory environment. $20,000 for a slip, trip, and fall. But we all know sometimes that you have people who engage lawyers for visitors that may trip, and the average to defend a visitor slip on your property is $50,000. So it's common sense that you find some way to mitigate slips, trips, and falls. So there are different hazards. I'll speak to the northern hazards. I'm in the Northeast, all of my plants are up there, so we're used to that. And you say, well, this is common sense, Duggar. It's going to snow. It is. It's going to do it on a regular basis. We have freezing temperatures that freeze your docks and your sidewalks and everything that you utilize, and you've got to spend extra time to mitigate it. So what is the root cause of that? You know, you say, well, it snowed, but was the plant prepared? Did they have the right planning? Did they have the right preparation to operate? You've got parking lots for your employees. You've got key entrances to the plant. You've got key travel areas, such as your forklifts that take your product off. That's usually on concrete. Docks, loaders, you know, any high traffic area. The real thing is all too often, there's no preparation. I think people have seen situations where they walked into the plant in the morning and said, okay, we've got to do something about the snow or the sleet before we get going. That's not preparation. So often the problem is it's a last minute decision. So the plant identified all the critical paths to do. They said, we'll clean the front door to the time clock. That's not going to cut it. That's not going to prevent a forklift accident from sliding into your conveyors or to somebody. And oftentimes they don't have any staff that's specifically assigned to it. We talk about accountability, who's responsible for things. You better have someone that's assigned to do those duties. It can't be democratic to where, well, is it going to be you or me, whoever's here today? You have to have someone that's assigned. Sometimes we don't have the right supplies. It's like, oh, go to the hardware store and get some. That's too late. Last minute decisions on what to do is really a problem. It's a classic conflict. If the plants start to operate before the walking surfaces and driving surfaces are safe, then you have probably failed in your mission to keep your employees safe. What can you do? It's a little thing. But you can set up a map, get your team together, ask them, you know, where's our biggest risk, draw out the areas that you need to. This one has this is where loaders are going to push, and then these little pieces here are pedestrian crosses. You know, this is one plant's approach to it, but it's a plan. And then to put teeth into it, put the form together that, okay, who's going to do what and where, when and where. And then some plants are even more dedicated. This is the employee parking lot, so they get them into the plant safely. This is the office. This is the dock, and that's the dock. If those places aren't ready, it's hard for you to operate. I mean, you can operate, but you're at risk. And you can do one step further. This is a cool one. I like this one. It says, okay, if you get 1 to 3 inches of snow, you got to start at 4 in the morning, and these are the people who do the work. If you get 10 inches of snow, you got to go an hour and a half early. And you may say, well, that's pretty detailed, but if you're in Maine,
which we have a plant in Maine, that might be what you have to do so that you come out of the box running that morning. You got to develop a plan. Plans got to include where to inspect, what to use in each section. Sand is preferably where your loaders go. You certainly don't want to put a chemical back where your potting soil is going to be mixed. So that's, you know, you got, don't leave that up to your employees to decide. They may not be thinking that ice melt is not cool to put in potting soil. Who's responsible? Who's going to do the work? Make sure you got that nailed down. When are you going to start it? If you start work at 7, you've got to have a team in there at 6 or, you know, 5:45. And the plant manager and supervisor need to be engaged in this. It can't be, oh, did we get that done? And your associates are struggling to work and no one's in charge. It's all about leadership. Non-winter hazards. Housekeeping is our biggest risk for non-winter. Tripping hazards in our industry, let's face it, on our production floor we have off-spec bags that may end up on the floor, pulled off the line, full and empty bags. We get straps, pallets, cardboard, loose dirt. We do a destructive testing for volume, right, Bob?
Yep.
So all that is got to be kept off the floor. And tripping injuries usually occur in the packaging area, but it will creep out into the dock and the shipping areas. This is a good example. You know, you walk past this, and if you as a leader walk past that and go, oh, they need to clean that up, really, it's like, okay, how did it happen? Who was responsible for it from an accountability perspective? And how do you keep it from happening again? It could be a tripping hazard. This one is not so bad, but it gets into housekeeping. You know, why is this lonely pallet not where it belongs? Discipline and order helps, you know, for your plants, and once you get them in that groove, it's a lot better. Common sense, yes. Say, changing a safety culture is not easy. It just is not easy. Take the time to plan a winter event. Execute and follow up on the details. If you do that with your associates and they know that you really are planning for it, you'll get their support and they'll execute it for you. Because they're just as frustrated as you are if their work area is not safe. In this case, little things like proper preparation can change the mindset of your associates. That's what you want. You want a culture. Chris talked about how do we make people accountable? How do we change cultures? It starts with you. It's a leader problem. And it can prevent costly injuries. Here's some other examples. This is a real life one. This is a question for someone to answer. If you're descending from a loader and you exit, do you exit facing the equipment or away from the equipment? Well, if you face away from the equipment, you can have an interesting problem with the treads of your boots and the treads of the equipment. You're not a beauty queen. You're not coming down the stairway. This is not Cinderella. You need to face the equipment with a three-point contact at all times and face it, because when you do that, you don't have this problem. This is an aggressive tread on a JCB, and if you look at your work boots, they have pretty aggressive treads. Well, this is a real life one. This is a guy that he's a beauty queen. He's coming out of the loader forward. He thinks he has three-point contact, but it's a bad position. As he got down and his boot grip interlocked with the tread, he's a big guy. The foot stayed there. He fell, tore the new meniscus and some ligaments, out 4 months. That's a little thing. I mean, have you ever thought about watching how your people get out of your loaders and forklifts?
Trucks.
So another common trip hazard, little thing. We all have equipment that's lagged to a floor, anchored to a floor. You may have bought a building and they took the old equipment out, you put your new equipment in, and there's a footprint of a piece of equipment that used to be there, and they cut the anchor off. But they didn't cut it off flush. It's just above the floor. So you have people who are walking across a concrete floor that's clear, you know, no obstruction. That little stub will catch people's feet, and they'll trip on a flat floor. And they can have a fall injury right there. It's got to be cut down below grade. That's an exaggeration, but that's the type of an anchor that would be sticking up above. It's the little things. A few other things to think about. I think Chris sort of hit this. You know, if you don't have a safety mission statement,
You need to create one. And when you create it, make sure it's driving the safety culture the right way. And if you do create it, you better live by it. Because if you don't live by it, then it's worthless. It's worthless to you, to your company, and to your associates. Do a safety survey. You know, some people cringe when they talk about, I don't really want to know what my employees think. But you should find out what they think about safety. Find out where the gaps are. Because they're on the battle floor of the factory every day. If you haven't done this before, consider doing a hazard hunt. A hazard hunt is where you take a group of 6 to 10 people and you said, okay, let's all look for something that will hurt someone. It could be a guard, it could be an uneven floor. It's amazing what you get out of that. Perceptions are everything when it comes to the hazard hunt. Cardinal rules. I don't know if you know what a cardinal rule is. It means if you break it, you are gone. And if you don't have a cardinal rule policy or process, you should. It draws a line in the sand that says, these are non-negotiable things that you will do. In our company, it's a seatbelt. If you don't wear a seatbelt, you are gone. No discussion. You have to. If you don't lock out tag out properly, or if you compromise an interlock, you're gone. People learn from that. If they know what's really important and it's their job, they'll either learn or they'll go somewhere else. Both of which are really good for you. Every accident that you have, Bob talked about this, share every accident that you have with the people in your plant. In our plant, if we have an incident, the next morning that employee stands up in our safety meeting and he describes what happened. You know, you say, well, gee, is that punishment? You know what? It's really impactful for that person to stand up in front of his peers and say what happened, because it's a good way to make sure that there's not a cover-up, because the words came from him. And then all the associates around there kind of get it, that this is what really happened, and he becomes accountable. Accountability is really important when it comes to safety. We also do the same thing that Oak Castle does. If there's an incident, once a month, we take all the incidents, and there's a call with all the plant managers in the company, and we go over each, and the plant manager has to lead that incident. Really is accountability, and it spawns a lot of spirited conversations, I would say. Things to consider: make housekeeping a major initiative and make it stick. Sloppy housekeeping is cancerous. It gives people permission to let the production floor be cluttered with pallets and bags and trips hazards. You know what? You as leaders, that's on you. If you walk out and you see that production floor cluttered, you've already won the battle. They work for you. It's their job to execute what you need. If the leaders don't make it, raise the standards, make it a clean plan, then you have failed, because that's a clean plan. It sounds cheesy, but a clean plan is a safe plan. Employees might not even know that they want a clean plant, but if you ever get the culture right and they keep it clean every day, they like it. They really do. No one likes to work into a really crappy environment. You've got to change the safety culture. Take a stand. Make a definitive statement with the associates. Here's the one. He talked about zero is possible. We tell our employees all accidents can be prevented, and we challenge them to tell us what can't be prevented. And if you really talk through them enough, they all can be prevented. Maybe you can't avoid a lightning strike, but the reality is if you, and you gotta believe it, because if you don't believe that, and you have a conversation with your employees, they know that you aren't on board. Your company is responsible for your safety. It is true, we are responsible for their safety. Make that statement. But we are not responsible to execute all the safety. It's on them to be accountable to protect themselves and others. And it's okay, they're two different thoughts. We're responsible for your safety, but you're responsible to execute to the rules. If they do that, they're in a pretty safe place. Empower your associates. This is one that culturally is kind of hard. If someone really knows that there's a risk and they might want to come forward and tell someone, because they'll be perceived as a whiner or someone that's not credible. But if it's a legitimate safety risk, you've got to make your door open and make sure that supervisors and your team understands we want to know those risks. A hazard hunt is a good way to get at that. But make sure you're accessible. And make sure they know that safety is about them. And Scott's,
You know, we beat that to death with them. Our safety people don't like us to say it, but the reality is, it is about the employee. I mean, a record that you have is worthless. What's really important is people who come to work in that morning get to go home and see their kids and their wife in the same condition that they came to work. And you got to make an associate center, because sometimes people take safety programs and say, oh, it's just another rule. It's going to take me longer to do my job. But it's about them. And when you get them to understand that, then they'll buy into it and execute your program for you. Celebrate your achievements. It's okay to do that. If you skip that, you'd be surprised. People know sometimes how long it's been since the last accident. Here's the end of my talk. Safety is good business. You can't pretend that you care about safety. Your associates see right through that. You've got to walk the walk. If you talk it and don't walk it, and if you go out into your plant, you don't have any hard hat and your gear on, and the proper things, the first thing they look at you is that, yeah, okay, yeah, boss is on the floor and he's not even following the rules. Those little things are noticed every single day. Focus on unsafe acts. It's a DuPont training program. Focus on what's undeniable. If you see someone says, well, that's forklift driving too fast, and someone says, oh, that's Joe, he always drives too fast. Well, okay, stop. Here's what's wrong with that. First off, I don't care if it's Joe or not. The word always really scares the hell out of me. And then to say he always drives fast, what's undeniable is a forklift. Was he driving too fast or not? That's what's undeniable. That's the act you need to work with. Don't let the fact that the guy's been there 20 years and he's a good guy and you go fishing with him, leave that alone. Strip it away. Deal with the unsafe act and deal with it swiftly. Don't do it next week when someone said, I saw him driving too fast a week ago. It's too late. It can be done. It's up to you. You as leaders, these are your people. They come to you. You offer them money to work. They give you their services. No one contracted to come and say, well, gee, I'll come to work for you and I think it's worth two fingers if I get it cut off. That's not part of the deal. What they come to work for you is you give them money and they give you their work. Working safe is a part of it. Make them understand that every day. I will say right here, the plant that I'm based at, we're at 25 years, no lost time accidents. The longest runs we've had between recordables was 11 years and 7. It can be done. It really can. It's not a small plant, but a 15 million bag a year plant. So if I can do it, you can do it. Where do you want your company to be? You need to think about that. And that's all I have.
Any questions for Don? Well, then I would like to thank Scott and Don very much for making this a great, great program. Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay, we're going to take a break, and then when we get back. We're going to take a 10-minute break. Please be back at 9:40.
Thank you. commercial wireless mic because he likes to move around. And a clipper. How'd it go?
Funny.
They were worried about, I know, I was going to say they were worried about not having